This is a lecture by L. Ron Hubbard, given on the 7th of October, 1953. The title of this lecture is Question and Answer, Step 5. This tape is 61 minutes long. Reproduced by Golden Era Productions.
I want to talk to you this morning about the processes which we would use in our course here. This isn't really a course, but hard to find the right word sometimes. Processes which I have been using and which I have found to be highly efficacious are SOP 8, SOP 8L, and 6 Steps to Better Beingness, Admiration Processing, and Explosions. I'll give you a very definite word warning. One of these processes is very dangerous, and that's Admiration Processing. And although it is very dangerous, it's tremendously effective. And because you have heard possibly tests run on admiration processing, I don't want you to shy off of it. It is, as far as I know, the best open sesame if you're going to run anything on anybody in the body to a very bad off case. Admiration processing is a very interesting process and has a lot of variations, but it is of the essence. And you will find your very occluded case going over a roller coaster. They go up a little bit and down a little bit and then up a little higher and then down a little bit. And it's a very slow process. And there isn't much of a way to rush it up. Now you can think of fantastic methods of speeding it up, maybe, but they just, it's just not true. Let's get this straight. I know it's really, with all the investigation I have done and tests that have been made, it is just not true that there is a tiny little button somewhere in the case which you pushed will suddenly turn a person in clear. This just isn't true. You will find yourselves, as auditors, rushing time on cases. And on rushing time, you will find inevitably, invariably, that you might as well have taken the time in the first place. Don't rush time on a case. Just use the process which you know will eventually work it out. And let the case go on and flounder and scream and fuss and so forth. You know what you're doing with the processes. For heaven's sakes, just continue with the process. Don't let, in other words, the hysteria of the case turn around into a hysteria of auditing. Psychiatry has done this for too many years. The psychotic is frantic, and the psychiatrist gets frantic. This works then with any human being. This person is in a hurry. They're rushing time, crowding time. They can't get enough on the time frame, so forth. So, watching that, are liable to assume that you, being a body and a human being, should be the answer to it, which is the same amount of hysteria, or the same amount of time rush, or the same amount of franticness. And this, in essence, is restimulation itself, is the mechanism of restimulation. By the way, going into that, why is Q&A, we'll take this up several times, but I'll say in processing, why does Q&A work? Why does it work? It ties up, not into a specialized or strange package, it ties up into a very neat package. Very precise. I will never get my anchor points back, and first I have to have my anchor points back, and then the very occluded case is running the satisfaction of having his anchor points back. He's running the satisfaction of having his anchor points back. Let's don't miss that one. He's running the satisfaction of having his anchor points back. According to him, he's completed the cycle of action. Now, Q&A is the question and answer, actually, on how do I get my anchor points back. That's about all. And that's what the Q&A is all about. Now, we can go into that much more precisely and lengthily, but Q&A goes immediately into anchor points, instantly. Now, every case has its own computation. Every case has its own computation. You can work this computation out in numerous ways. The worst way is to evaluate for the case and tell it what its computation is. Even though it's written all over the case, if you tell the case, it won't do the case any good. So, you use techniques which blow the computation into view for the case. That's the neat one. You just use techniques which all of a sudden make it totally self-revelatory. You didn't have anything to do with it, you see. Your preclear thought it all up itself. And it does him some good. Well, acceptance-level processing does this. You start running acceptance-level processing, and you say, all right, now let's put out, you can do this in a snide sort of way. I very often do, by the way, it's bad of you. You do it in a snide sort of way. You say, all right, start offering up sick children and see to whom they appear acceptable. And let's just have sick children. See who accepts sick children. Go on, let's see the whom they're accepting. Well, that's the wrong way to run it, right? It's the same one. Keep offering up these sick kids. Next thing you know, my parents, my grandma. And the ally of the case is the one to whom the sick child was acceptable. That's the most vital button possibly run if you're going to fool around with the past of all. That's going to be a vital one. To whom was a sick child acceptable? To whom was a sick person acceptable? And sure enough, you get the ally. Now, to whom was a combative child acceptable? And you run into the don't fight computation of the case. There's nobody. Freak girl just tells you, nobody. Let's run a child that won't fight and find out who that's acceptable to.
Gee, that's acceptable to everybody.
Gosh. But particularly acceptable to somebody on the case, and this is the one, this person, oddly enough, you learn this very quickly. The non-combative child, completely non-combative child, is most acceptable to the member of the family who can't work. The effort just jumps there. Effort crosses. The person to whom non-combativeness was essential also can't work. Fighting requires effort and energy. And if fighting requires effort and energy, work also requires effort and energy. The person who won't fight won't work. People substitute and often get mixed up on, they substitute anger for fighting. That fighting, anger is way down tone scale for fighting. People just get mad and flare up. They just won't fight, that's all. People who fight simply fight. Told someone rather recently when they were throwing a bunch of anger at me one way or the other, they were being very, very hostile and so forth. Well, why are we doing this now? I tell you what, I'll sit down to the sport goods store and get some 6-ounce gloves, and we'll go a couple of rounds and then we'll feel better. But there's no reason to run in a symbol like anger on this thing. So, and this person, being a girl, couldn't quite figure this with. That was in essence that's sensible. So she's a girl, it's too bad. She has to use, men had taught her, anger rather than blow, because her shoulder is hinged differently. And she doesn't strike the same blow as the man. Women, by the way, very often go in for sword play and so on, if permitted to do so in the past. Simply because this is better than running in a symbol form. By the way, in running this, you occasionally find, way back on the track, the women being the combative characters, tremendously combative characters, and the fellow just can't understand how he could be upset about women today, see? Because he has never fought with women today. Women have never done him any damage. That's way back on the track someplace. So. Very often, as a little child, this is keyed in, because older sisters, something like that, have a habit of beating a little kid up and so forth. He never quite gets over it. But the rest of society tells him he can't beat up women. So there's no interchange of effort. You will find the interchange of effort as the vital point at which you're striking. Because you've got to rehabilitate the person's ability to run into effort. Now, the reason I've been talking about it is so we can get into what are we trying to do with these techniques. Well, we could go over this with great rapidity. We're trying to rehabilitate the bricklayer's ability to create, manufacture, any way, shape, or form, use, direct, locate energy of the effort variety. Energy, the effort variety. And we're trying to rehabilitate his ability to admire broadly. And his best ability is admiration. That's his best ability. Effort is not his best ability. Effort is down scale. Because everything, all force dissolves in the face of admiration. I give you the universal solvent there. It's admiration. So the two kinds of processing, which are extremely basic, of course, are explosions and admiration. And if you get hung up on a case and it's sticky and it doesn't exteriorize, when it exteriorizes, it starts out and goes sparring and goes back in again, you're up against a proposition of insufficient admiration and an inability to create or handle effort, which is energy. This is awful simple. It's a mechanical problem. It is not a problem that has anything to do with thought. It's strictly mechanical. Now, if you want to hit somebody in the nose sometime, observing, just walk down here in the street, walk up to a guy, slam, hit him in the nose. Now, if this fellow's fairly low on the tone scale, he'll stand and think about it. Mm-hmm. And then he'll talk about it. Fellow who's high on the tone scale simply slam you in the nose again. They just return the motion right now. Pam! Simplicity. Very, very simple. Now, this business about if he's low scale, how'd he get low scale? Well, he's been slammed in the nose often enough and then told that he mustn't return the action. And why, how is he told? Well, it's by being slammed in the nose the second he started to return the first slam in the nose. And then when he tried to return the second slam in the nose, he got the third slam in the nose. And when he tried to return the first, second, third slam in the nose, somebody hit him with a sledgehammer. After that, he thinks. Parents are always standing around saying to little Willie, "Now you must think before you act. You should think things over. You shouldn't be impulsive, so forth." Well, why don't they just take him out and chain him up to a post like an animal or something? Just hang him. It'd be kinder. Because the fellow who has to think before he acts has to key in for himself a number of impacts so that he can think. Now, feeling is condensed looking, and thinking is condensed feeling. So you'll see what a circuit looks like. Feeling is a fellow being hit with a tack hammer. His lookingness being hit with a tack hammer. You can just envision somebody standing there looking, there's a couple of beams going out, a couple of beams coming in. See, and you take these beams as they go out and they come in, and you take a tack hammer, and you just knock them down a little more condensed. So they aren't quite as long. They have the same mass in them. He would start feeling rather than seeing. Now, if you took this little condensed mass that you finally left with a tack hammer and started hitting it with a sledgehammer, and really knocked it down real condensed and so forth, you'd get thinking. And that's what a circuit looked like in the essence. Now, how do you get rid of this? This is obviously force, isn't it? If the beams of perception are beams of force. So, how do you get rid of this? You have to uncondense thinkingness. And it isn't done by getting the pre-clear to think. It could be done, theoretically, by getting them to feel. But it is best done by getting him to look. And if you, therefore, if you get thinking up to feeling, what have you done then? If you run it in terms of engrams, the engram that's causing him to think will start causing him to feel. You turn on the somatic. Now, if you notice in effort processing, if you run a lot of effort, postulates come up. Now, it's true that postulates very high on the tone scale regulate this sort of thing, and they're above effort. A person is free to make an independent postulate, don't think. They'll make the same mistake that psychology did, saying that all thought is derived from aberration. All creative work is the result of a neurosis, all sorts of things. A person is perfectly competent doing this. But their thinking freely gets interfered with, and now, here we go, and we get this confounded cycle of impact, and the impact produces the thought. So certainty is impact to a low-scale free flare. And certainty is simply knowing to a high-scale free flare. And this knowingness, however, this level of knowingness could be called a lot of things, but it just knows. Well, how's the best way to know? Best way to know is to pervade. The most knowingness you could have would be a complete pervasion. If you really want to know about that wall and everything there is to know about the wall, the last place you would go is to a scientific textbook. Because that would merely put into words somebody else's experiences. Oh boy, are we into a complex system of communication. Has very little validity. But if you were able to pervade and be the wall, you would get every pattern it had. If you could do this very, very well, you would get every kind of a pattern that could possibly come out of walls. Molecular, chemical, so on. You see, experiencing, which is to say, perceiving in its completeness an atom, would be very superior to merely knowing that this formation of structure existing in space was called an atom. And education very easily goes downscale to a point where it simply makes nomenclature. Now, some of the more debased scientists are really in terrible condition. When they can't do anything about a subject, they name it. And then they make everybody memorize all these names. And they say they know about the subject. What of it? You can't even argue with it. So it's beyond argument. This stuff's completely rude. All right. So on evaluation of techniques, then, first and foremost thing we'll try and remedy is looking. Now we'll get lookingness. And therefore that tells you you've got to rehabilitate the number of pupils a person has. And you've got to have lots more pupils. And every one of these viewpoints has got to be able to admire. Why has it got to be able to admire? That's so it can dissolve any force that's standing in its road. And the next thing you have to rehabilitate is force. What is called force, energy, effort. What do we mean by force? We mean an exerted, directed foot-pound of push or pull, brush off. This is force, see? Push out this way. Now, force can even be exerted in a balance whereby you have the fellow, he's apparently in a static balance. And that is what, in the past, physicists have been calling static. Boy, it's just gorgeous. They said this word static and then gave it a dictionary definition and then gave it this other, and it merely meant forces in balance. That was their apathy about the fact that there could be no about the fact that they couldn't resolve force, so there always had to be force. So a physicist, if you're explaining it to him, he's trying to say, "You're static is so and so and so and so." No, he knows what a static is. A static's a very interesting thing. We haven't changed this word, by the way, because it runs right straight into physics. This is the one word that we have around which has double definition. He says, that wastebasket's a static. Why? Well, it's not in motion, he says. Well, that wastebasket is traveling 1,000 miles an hour simply by virtue of being on the surface of the Earth, which revolves 24,000 miles in circumference, and it's 24,000 miles, and it takes 24 hours to go around, more or less. That's 1,000 miles an hour. The wastebasket's going in one direction. And then there's seven other earthly motions that make that wastebasket go. It is not even vaguely in a balance of forces. And in addition to that, internally, it is in a tremendous amount of motion. So we don't even vaguely have static. I mean, if the guy says static, it means something at rest. Well, the only thing that could be something at rest, you just have to get down and figure this out. You get the same definition for static as you get at zero. No wavelength, no motion, no mass, no position in time, quite important, and no relation to other objects, which is to say no location in space. That is zero, and that would be a static. And sure enough, this really works out, by the way. Absolute zero has no resistance electrically. So, you see, we weren't just reaching for the moon. We were just had it right there. I mean, this is a proper physical definition. We are not off the rails. We've really discovered something brand new to physics, although not brand new to the whole track, and that is the definition of a static. What is a static? Now, life itself is this nothingness only so far as this universe is concerned. It is not necessarily in itself nothingness. See, it can be a nothingness elsewhere, but in this universe, it's a nothingness. It has an ability in this universe. And so we get a paradox. Well, what can it do in this universe? It can look. That's the best it can do. And it can reach and withdraw. It can grasp and let go. With what? With force, effort, energy. It can use this. But what can it do about its excess force and energy? It can simply say it doesn't exist and it won't exist. Now, that's high-scale postulates. Or, at the lower part of the scale, it simply has to have, just has to have, a sufficient admiration. And it goes, and all these tons and tons of energy stored up. That just about. Now, the big imponderable was, where did thought go? You thought the thought, and then it went someplace. That was the big imponderable. Well, that is an imponderable only brought about by a misconception on the part of physics of space. All space is new space. Space is being manufactured all the time. Pam, 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 pam. Your thetan can expand space and contract space. And he can put space into... not the past, but he can just put it into other space. And this is, you see, he's manufacturing space. Space, there isn't such a thing. Well, a guy says it's space. And everybody's been able to look into a box, a shoe box or something, and he's seen that there's a space. He looks in this wastebasket and he sees there's a space there. So he thinks that's a static space. My God, that space, as best as I can see here, is changing at the rate of 1/c. Just as terrific were, every tiny shift in their relationship of the particles of perception, of course, would bring about new space. You just got continuous new space. But this isn't just changing the pattern of space. It's just new space, that's all. Well, that's time. Time is actually space, 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 space. And the last space is a different shape than the next to the last space. And what is a particle of light? Is a particle of light starting from the sun the same particle of light which arrives here? Now, this is an epistemological question. And for our purposes, nope. 1/c later. That's a very clumsy fraction. Very puzzling. If you sit down and figure it out, scratch your head for a while, you get all confused. That's why I use it. There's this infinitesimal You see, it's traveling at the speed of light. Well, the speed of light is only relative to other particles. So it is traveling at the speed of light.
That's real great. That's real great.
It is. There isn't any reason why it even exists. But you get this manifestation, and every one over C in time, infinitesimal fraction of time, you got new particles in there. Therefore, you have new space in there. Because the space doesn't exist amongst the particles, it's just a demarcation of space. And we're off into the realms of epistemology. But we can do this. We can do this. We don't have to understand this because it'll all fall out in our laps. There's no reason to be upset about it one way or the other, or even get confused about it. Because actually, we could sit down and argue about this, and argue and argue and argue about this. Because we're at the ceiling. We're at the ceiling of our knowledge when we start talking about construction of this universe space. But boy, we're sure at a higher ceiling than they have been in the past. Because they just figured, well, there was space, see? And that was it. It was just one chunk of space, which made thought impossible. Thought, in its behavior, forgetting and remembering thought and so forth, would depend on continuous acquisition and disposal of anchor points. So that you've got new space, new space, new space, new space. You get your new space and then make it old space. New space, old space. How does it become old space? Well, it just becomes old space because you say it's old space, that's all. And it's still there. And all the energy deposits there are actually in present time. And this is the most horrible thing for a person to discover. Because if he discovers this with no further assistance or therapy and so on, he'll jam his track instantly, of course, because he'll look around and he'll see that all the body has is with him. You get ridges and so on. All right, what's a ridge? I'm not inviting you to pull all your thought in, because you see, after you realize it's there, you're liable to bring it in and take a look at it and inspect it and say, well, what do you know, I had the past after all? And you're answering the question of where is the past? Here is the past. Well, that's nonsense too. Because you don't have all the anchor points you always had. Not by a long ways. They deteriorated. If you don't believe this, try to go back in time and recover your 1932 car or something. It just isn't there anymore. It rotted away. So the anchor points have changed. You can find it today. You can find your 1932 car as it was, brand new. In a facsimile. The facsimile is the answer to where's the past. Well, a fellow could get very upset about this if he didn't realize this orienting schedule. Feeling is condensed looking. Well, what's a ridge? What's a ridge? A ridge is just condensed anchor points. Well, what then is a beam of energy? Condensed anchor points. Why should you stay out of using energy, actually? Well, you don't have to, because you have to condense anchor points, so that condenses space in order to have any energy. But you can still make beams of energy and use beams of energy. There's nothing against this. All right, what happens here when you get this fellow? The second he starts to put out a beam of energy, he is swept one into the other by a terrible feeling of degradation. What's this one? Because you'll run into it. Coax this person to put out a beam of energy, and they put out a beam of energy. Boy, do they feel degraded. The energy's too condensed. It's thick. It's like glue or soup or something. Another thing is the body happens to be this type of anchor point held together by life type of energy. Even melt it. Let's imagine the man built out of wooden blocks. There's a man built out of wooden blocks. There are all the wooden blocks. Now these wooden blocks that he's built out of is this type of anchor point. It's a force anchor point. The unit of force has various capabilities.
This lecture is continued on side two of this cassette.
Well, now, let's assume this man has got these wooden blocks, this type of thing, glued together. What are they glued together with? Glued together with a slightly different type of anchor point. Now, if we take all the glue out of the man with wooden blocks, built out of wooden blocks, the wooden blocks will fall apart, won't they? If you took all the life anchor point type of glue out of the human body, it would simply fall to pieces. Let's say the molecules of calcium, the molecules of silica, the molecules of this, the molecules of water, and so on. They would simply fall to pieces. So the body's glued together. And if you want to make a test of this sometime, I will never make a test of this in demonstration. You can actually run it. It's very frightening. You can just feel the body start to skip.
Glue is a kind of affinity.
So you get this body's held together. What life has done is convinced, quote unquote, the anchor points that they were all alike and had certain functions and had an affinity one for another, whereas they don't. So you could actually, as you might say, melt down the preclear. And we get to the next stage. Now this is different than simply making him vanish by using up all the effort. This is different. You're just melting down. That's all. If you could turn on enough admiration on the bank, you would melt down your preclear. Like that. Take an awful long time, probably, and a lot of strong admiration, and so on. But the net result of it would be melting down. That's what I'm trying to say, and the only point I'm really trying to make all through this dissertation is that it's these anchor points held together with another type of energy, infinity. They're kept in communication over a thing called admiration. And these admiration particles, we're calling admiration particles, that's the best designation for them, preclear to preclear, they're held together. They're in close proximity and held there by condensed admiration, not by condensed force. These are force particles held together by condensed admiration. That which is not admired tends to persist. So a guy keeps pulling in these admiration and so forth so as to stay together. And if he doesn't make admiration easily, and so on, why, he'll really persist. Boy, will he be persistent. This comes under the head of indomitable will and all kinds of other things. But force can go a long way until it runs into that fatal thing called admiration. And if it ran into a small quantity of admiration, it would dissolve. Particles of force only exist as beams of force because of cohesion of admiration. So you fire them and you get space because they come to pieces. Now let's take a little gadget here, a little tiny cube, and it's got eight anchor points. And this little tiny cube is all together. What's holding it together? We'll say it's affinity. The expression in auditing for that is admiration. It's an energy. It's a particle. All right, it's all held together very nicely. And boy, is that a tight little cube. Real tight. You hold it up there. It's persisting, gone on for a long time. You hold it up. My, that's certainly lovely. What do we get? We get the expansive feeling which people get in behavior when somebody tells them they've done a good job or something. They get an expansive feeling. Well, that's actually these little particles can be. Why is it that the cells, bone structure, and so on, of an old person, smaller than in a young person? Why is it that people, as they get older, have smaller cells, smaller tissue patterns, and so on, than they had when they were younger. Why is this? The difference then between an old person and a young person is the size of the cell. And this actually is in terms of micromillimeters. So you might say a measurable size. It's distinctly different. What is this? It's just the same thing. Little tiny cube, 8 force particles. All right, that's a basic unit of mass, 8 force particles. And these 8 force particles are less admired, and they're just tighter together. This person, throughout his life, has run into less admiration than he thought he should encounter, and he shrunk. You see, so you get a tightening together process in the face of non-admiration. Tells you that you possibly, theoretically, could monitor how much mass there was in something by monitoring and actually denying it admiration, and you get more mass in it. I suppose if everybody hates the atom bomb enough, it'll really get condensed. You'll probably get much better atom bombs. But we're not going out on that we monitor the physical universe with such great ease. It's a big universe. All right. Now, I'm not being theoretical, oddly enough. I'm being intensely practical when I'm telling you this. Because every preacher who's having trouble with his case, if you ask him, would have this as a common denominator amongst all such preachers. It's too tight. And that he's in too close. His body feels too tight. Things are too close up to him. See? Second, somebody complains to you about the fact he has a constriction in his left knee. And the tendons of his left leg are insufficiently long. You can just count on the fact that there is in suspense in that area force particles which are coheesed too tightly. There's been admiration there that was not refortified. Postulate wise, there's an expectancy of further admiration, and the thing was constructed on this basis. I get admiration for this, therefore I can expect further admiration about this. So it's built on so much quantity of admiration per unit of tendon. That was its design. That was the design of the somatic, if you please. I get admiration for this, and I will then, of course, be able to expect this much admiration for this. And he doesn't get it. And so, having been built on that postulate or expectancy, he gets a constriction of the force particles. And it gets worse. He gets tighter and tighter and tighter and tighter. It's horrible that a child who has had tremendous quantities of admiration when very young builds on that basis. And then finds out what is admired, what's accepted, what's appreciated, orients itself completely on this, and then later on finds out these qualities are not admired. Now, all of this is built on the basis that one has to receive everything from the exterior. And the interior admiration is all that's going to do it any good in the first place. The fact that he was admired in the first place simply re-stimulates what admiration he is able to whip up. We aren't dealing now with an interchange of energy from exterior to interior. And so when he sees that this is no longer admired, he stops admiring it. But you'll find everybody making some sort of feeble effort to admire something enough when they start going by the boards. They do this feeble effort. Well, there wasn't anybody in the hospital as lame as I was. You see, they're trying to boost that. It's still there. This is the same computation as how do I collect my pay? Money is the accepted medium of admiration in this society. The person, when he's paid, turns on then some admiration for himself. He permits money to monitor his own ability to create admiration. And if he isn't paid for something, you can just run this on some fellow. You can run this on a workman who's really bogged down. You can get enough rebound just with this, so he'll really go back to work. You just run this. Now, let's get the feeling of not being paid for the work you've done. And the next thing you know, that was real tough, and so on. And the beautiful sadness of how he's been wronged, which the Communist Party loves to turn on, how these people, and so on, turns on, and there he goes. He runs out. He feels better. He feels fine. He gets an sufficient expansion of particles so that he again feels a safe to use force. Now, the reason he feels it's impossible for him to use force anymore is because he's already too tightly packed with force, and he's afraid that he won't get any admiration for the force he does supply, and so if he doesn't get any further admiration for the force he supplies, oh, brother, he's in terrible condition. He's horrible, real bad off. Because he'll have masses of energy, masses of ridges, and he won't be able to get rid of them. Another thing is it tails him in to a point where tiredness is that blackness in the explosion, and it is merely a certain proximity of space. All these emotions come about as a certain proximity or flow characteristic of space, in space. And all these things tie together very neatly. So on the one side of it there, the fellow gets afraid of using force because he doesn't think it'll be admired. And if it isn't admired, then it'll be stuck with it. So he can blow things up anymore. Won't be admired. He's scared to. There's an actual practical reason, as far as the body's concerned, why he'd better not use force. See, practical. This actually will happen to the body. If he uses too much force and it's not admired exteriorly, why, he'll be in bad shape. Well, what's wrong with the computation is that it has to be admired exteriorly. That is what is wrong with the computation, and that is what is wrong with the mind, and that is what is wrong with condensed looking, and that is what is wrong with feeling and thinking and so forth. And the only thing that's wrong with it is the feeling that the admiration must come from exterior. Now, it's never been admired that admiration must come from the exterior. See? So there's your basic persistence. Nobody has ever admired the fact that somebody expected admiration. And so we take the problem apart on its own basis. See? And there's where the mind goes wrong. That's all there is to it. And the other one is, the guy is so scared of using force of any kind that he'd rather wonder what the significance of a relatively innocent black mass is than to look at a big white mass. No, those big white masses bite. They're full of force. Those black masses, they're only laggardly painful and so forth. Because you see something white, then afterwards you get bitten. See? Nothing. Flash. And then as the particles fly through the air, fly through space, bam! Whatever markup you've got there to deal. And you were looking at this thing, so what did you get? As you looked at the whiteness, you got condensed space. See? You looked at the whiteness, and it was a spreading whiteness, and it came in your direction. And so you expected some whiteness to come from the exterior. You didn't realize the only reason you saw it is because you had a viewpoint up next to it. You think when it travels through space, it's going to do this, and it's going to take these viewpoints, you see, and it's going to drive them all back, and it's going to give you, per force, an energy beam. Whether you like it or not, it's going to give you an energy beam. You were looking at the explosion. Let's say you were a light year away from the thing, and you looked at the explosion. You looked at it with a viewpoint, and if you looked at it with a viewpoint, then you got into this kind of a silly situation. The viewpoint with which you looked at it was probably a point of maps. And it got driven in, and so you got condensed looking as a reason for, and there is your explosions. And there's your blackness. The only blackness that anybody's got hanging around is it's just reading. Reading is a lock, see, on it. Just reading would do this. Reading is just a lock on it. Motion pictures, fixed distances are just locks. And they're locks on what? They're locks on nothing but, and nothing but at all, the boom and condensation of an explosion. See the explosion characteristic? All right, boom. You've got condensed space. And as it condenses, a fellow first starts feeling good about the explosion, and then feeling damn hurt by the explosion, and then running an emotional and finally a thought about the explosion. Well, you see how that thing compares and how you get condensed looking out of explosions. So you handle these two potent forces, these two potent things, rather, and one is the force of energy and the other is the force of admiration. You do this with admiration, processing for admiration, but you run explosions and brackets for the other one. And that is about the limit of good, sensible mental process. I gave you yesterday some class processing as a group. I didn't give you group processing as we do it. The concepts I gave you came under the heading of understanding. See? They were concepts. And we're running these things as concepts. Now, they do things to a case. There is no doubt about this. You can get a change of behavior and all sorts of things on a case. But you run these for a little while, and then you, if you're not exteriorized, it's a different proposition if you're exteriorized. Sitting down here way across the line or something of the sort, and you're a couple of miles away and running this process, it's very easy to do because that's all a Thetan does. Change his mind. And a concept, he runs it for a moment, he says, that's silly, suddenly integrates it. It isn't that he runs anything out or runs anything, and he just changes his mind. The concepts show him how to change his mind. So you see, such processing is very beneficial to a Thetan exteriorized. So that's the only process he's got. But the other case, the very occluded case, I checked this in the class yesterday. So some startling things happened for a moment, but there's no persistence in startling things that happened for a moment. So the fellow in the body, does not benefit from concept processing. He has momentary changes, but in our terms of what we're doing, for heaven's sakes, don't think that a guy in a body is going to benefit from concept processing. He's not. All you may succeed in doing with him is just nailing him down tighter because he keeps expecting something to happen. Now, the one thing that he's doing is it must not happen. He's gotten to an interlock. The explosion mustn't reach me, and I mustn't reach the explosion, which is satisfactory to him. It's quite satisfactory because it doesn't hurt. But it mustn't happen again. Or it mustn't happen further, because if it did, it will hurt. Or he'll lose it. And he's running, at the same time, the satisfaction of having gotten his anchor points back. He's at least gotten them back in facsimile form. He got them back all right. The explosion drove them back, but the time they got back to him, they were black. You will just have a dreadful time with this guy to get him to do this if you don't watch it very slippily. All you got to do is get him to look. And he'll really exteriorize. But he's got to have something run on him before probably he will go into this very far. He's got to have something wrong. He's got to get either by admiration processing or the processing of explosions some sort of an idea that his black pattern can shift. Now you can even do that with reach and withdraw formula H, which you'll have. Now there's an argument here. There's two schools of thought possible at that point. And the other one is that you should never permit him anything that permits him to dabble around with thinkingness. Never. Shouldn't do this. And I've had this reported by auditors. I just warned them. The luck I've been having is I clip it with explosions and clip it with admiration processing and then hit it with six steps of better beingness. And away he'd go. And when he was outside, I would immediately run step one in such a way to turn up his ability to manufacture admiration and then concentrate like mad on his ability to manufacture admiration. And then he finds out he can dissolve unwanted force in the body and he'll regain his perception. His perception is condensed by an absence of admiration and a feeling that he cannot admire. Now, do you understand this occluded case a little bit better? We'll go over this many times, but I hope you understand this case a little bit better. The thing for you to do is to get some reality on your processes. That would be a very good thing for you. Very good thing. And because I have been using them now for months and have had very good luck, uniformly had good luck with these techniques that I'm telling you about. I don't think there will be anything at all wrong with you just sitting down, if you wish, and just memorizing SOP-8, SOP-8-L, and the six steps of better beingness. They're just that rote. It's the same thing of how to drive a taxi cab, how to clear a human being. Same thing. Gee, you know, SOPA has now been in existence for about, actually it's been in existence for about 8 months. But to my satisfaction, it's been in good shape for about 5 months. And it's just been coasting along. This is an unheard of thing in Dianetics and Scientology. Unheard of. It just goes on. Now the only way we're varying this is with SOP-8L, which takes the equivalent case at level 5 and runs in six steps to better beingness, explosion, and admiration on PAM. And at step 4 puts in acceptance level processing. Just educational. See, that's SOP-8 learning. 8L, learning. He's got to learn something about life before he's happy about doing anything about it. And you give him acceptance level processing at step 4, and he says, my God, that's true. I have to be a certain level of sickness. All these things come through to him with great truth. Holy God, he said, I would rather, if you'll excuse me, I'll be outspoken in this class because you'll really run into things. He said, you know, that horse manure is much more acceptable to me than cream puffs. He won't be able to understand this until all of a sudden he sees that that's true. So he says, well, all right, so it's true. So it is. Then he remembers, his dog being beaten when he was a little kid for having eaten horse manure. And he's still been trying to protect and defend the right of the dog to eat horse manure. Well, this is what happens to your computations. I didn't just introduce that just to be risque this morning. I introduced that as the climate of operation on acceptance level processing. Boy, the stuff that is acceptable is the stuff that's been resisted. We'll go over this cycle of resistance and breakdown before we get through here, very much so. When a man's resisted, resisting so much, you see, his level of look comes back in view of the resistance. His level of look comes back again, and then his level of think starts in on the resistance, and his level of think turns them to a level of accept. Man that will think about something will accept it. You go down here, a city official, you pull out $100 bill and say, well, I'd like something illegal. My dear sir, I will have you know I am a civil servant. Get the hell out of this office. He didn't think about it, did he? But the next guy, he went in to see, he says, well, I don't know. That's an awfully adventurous step for me to take. It's very illegal for me to falsify a car registration. He'll take it. You see, you got he'll think about it. A man will accept what he'll think about. I mean, I don't say that just baldly. I just give you that as a practical demonstration of it. So you get people who read books about perversions and so forth. They may never have practiced perversion, but they're right on the borderline. And you start to run acceptance-level processing on bad perversions. And the most terrific relief comes over you pretty clever. Then you finally say, you know, that's probably a terrible thing to do. This, you'll suddenly wake up to this. He reverses the process. Now, how would you run acceptance-level processing to extend looking? It'd be a cute little trick, wouldn't it? Run acceptance-level processing to extend looking. Well, you keep putting out the things you accept, making them get them further and further away from him. So you have disease. All right, now the first time you start to run disease, boy, it's right up on him. See, and you get him to accept disease easier, and all of a sudden, he's going out. Well, that's the purpose of the bracket more than anything else, is to get those things out there. See, you put a person out there and get him to accept it. You're just extending his looking. Now have two other people, one to the other, and you're out there further with more people doing it, remedying what scarcity viewpoints. Here he goes. Because anybody that runs his body doing anything is running another person doing it. Don't worry about life all being tied up together. He's all tied up together with something that isn't him already. All right, then, how do you run acceptance-level processing? One variation. Or how do you run explosions? You get them further and further away. And then you get them tolerated closer and closer. And then further and further away. But remember, we've got distance and location with which we're working. We're working with distance and location. Distance and location. Continually. SOPA, which you find in 16G, SOPA-L, and I told you just now what a variation it had, six steps to better beingness. These are the processes we're going to use. SOPA-L includes admiration and explosion. Most important thing to do for a case is to rehabilitate his ability to admire and to handle force. If you can do this, he comes clean. The least important things to do for the case while he's still in the body is change his mind. That's the least important thing. If he's in his body and he can't get out easily, you've got to make him look. Six steps to better being, is best to handle. Now you touch it up a little bit with admiration processing, something like that, it'll vary his looking pattern slightly. He'll see that something can't happen interiorly. But he's willing to run a concept, and he's not willing to run a look. So you give him a little bit of concept, slide him out into looking as fast as possible. And as far as an exteriorized thetan is concerned, all you do with exteriorized thetan is, in effect, run rising scale concepts. He was getting him change his mind upwards. Get him to get in happier and happier and happier shape about the same thing. See? Now those are the processes we're going to use here for 6 weeks. And you're supposed to come up with an optimum group process. Let's take a break.